Okay. Okay, it's that time now. And if I can do this without, you know, tears in my eyes, because these two people mean so much to me. We've traveled many roads together, watched kids grow up, and part of the reason this meeting is so successful is because of their heart and spirit. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my dear friends, Pat and Candy. I don't know which one of you guys want to go first. Okay.
Hi everyone, I'm Candy and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
When Willie called about a year ago and asked us to come over and do this tonight, I was so excited. I thought, oh, this is great, how fun. And then today came and I was like, oh no. Oh no. And, you know, I'm just, I'm really honored to be here. I'm going to be honest, because my program tells me to be rigorously honest at all times. And my dear Al-Anon women remind me of my honesty and how important that is. So my honesty right now is that I'm very uncomfortable. And yet, I love all of you so much. We had a lot of time driving over here and reflecting on everything. And, you know, when I heard him ask how many newcomers are here, right away I could just recall back a few of you, and one special one here in the group tonight knows just who he is, that was a newcomer one night, and I just loved this guy so much, and I could tell he was embarrassed, and he was shy, and he was uncomfortable, and you know, every time he was at that meeting, he said something really special to me, that meant something to me. And I go back to those first meetings that was described in this. I guess I've heard this. I think when Pat first wrote this, I heard it, but I'd forgotten that he wrote all this about the meeting. But I called this my once a month home group, and I made it my once a month home group. I was here every month on the birthday anniversary meeting. And at dinner tonight, I was reflecting and telling stories about the first potluck meetings that they had, and how Pat and I, we felt like it was a big party, like at our house or something, but it was the other side of the church and it was way over there. And after this potluck meeting that we put on, we thought, and there was a few of these guys that helped, we'd go to bed that night and we'd think, oh boy, I didn't get to eat, did you? No, I didn't get to eat. And he said, you know, next year, let's make sure we ask someone to dump the trash, because I looked over and the one trash can now just was overflowing. So next year, let's ask one of the guys. I know they'll help. Let's ask them. And the next year, we'd come around and we'd have this big, what we thought was our party again, the anniversary, the second year and the third year. And about after 5 years, the group decided, let's get a committee. And Pat and I are going, duh. Why didn't we think of that, you know? It took 5 or 6 years before they got a committee to do this anniversary meeting. And then I was saying, as you were taking the cakes, because I really apologize to all the cake people and want to say happy birthday and celebration, but I was busy talking, and I said, you know, I remember when the girls, the women would come and take cakes, and a couple of alcoholics said to me, that's not their whole group, how come they get cakes? And I said, well, the business meeting of the Thursday night Let's Rock, they don't listen to me at the business meetings. They don't run it my alcoholic way, you know. But so we've had a lot of old times and old memories that we just look back at this little tiny group that started out in a little circle and how much it's grown. And we talk about you, we tell everybody about you wherever we go and wherever we travel, about that Thursday night men's stag that has over 100 people, and nobody believes us, you know. We brag about it and talk about it. And we miss it. We really do miss all of you guys. We love where we live now. We love recovery still. We love sobriety. We love everything except we miss our people here. And it, you know, I can remember being in AA meetings early on and somebody moved to Hawaii. Wow, that was cool. And they'd come back and say, we came home because it wasn't our home AA. And I think, they're sick, you know. But that's kind of how we feel. We love where we are, but we miss all of you so dearly. And I've gotten to connect with a few of you tonight, one-on-one. I wish I had time to see everybody and meet everybody. And I've invited a lot of you to come over and see us in St. George. We have our nice guest bedroom. Just don't all come at once, but we'd love to have you all come and visit us and visit our AA and our Al-Anon over there. So I get to go first. How much time do I have? Whatever. Tell me half hour, 30 minutes. I love to go first when we share together because I get to talk about him and tell you all about it. We were real sick. We were really, really sick when we got here. I tried to get sober many times. I relapsed many times. I tried to get him drunk many times so he wouldn't be upset with me being drunk all the time. And it just didn't work. If there could have been a way that I could have figured out how to get him drunk more than I did, or he would, he was not much fun. He really, really needed you when he got here. He really needed you. And I had enough friends and support people that would tell me that, you know, if he'd just get off your back, you wouldn't drink so much, or if he'd just be a little more. And I was thinking about this big group and this big party and the anniversary parties that I described, who felt like they were our anniversary parties the first few years of this meeting. I used to love to have people over, invite people over, have parties, everything, because they would come and then we could have booze, you know. Normally, he didn't let me have anything anytime unless we had people over. And so a lot of my drinking started out in the bars. And I worked at a company when I went for that first job interview, because we both decided that we wanted those things, you know, and that I would go to work when our kids were real little. And I went for this job interview that was prearranged, set up, because I'm the insecure alcoholic, didn't know it at the time. But I needed to have the interview arranged for me because I had no self-esteem or self-confidence. And she set this interview up, and it was with the boss that when he met me, he said, let's go to lunch for the interview. And he took the bookkeeper and another key employee, and we went to lunch, and the boss ordered a martini. And so I wanted him to like me, I wanted to get the job, so I said, I'll have one too. And 7 martinis later, I got the job. Now, prior to that, I didn't tell you, but prior to that, I had only had Spignata wine or that Dunes Farm or something that he'd let me have on occasion when we invited people over. And maybe a beer. If we got a 6-pack, maybe I got one. And he's a big guy, look at him, so he'd get 5. So I never got my share at home. And I got these 7 martinis in the job interview. I don't know how I got home that day. I didn't even know what a martini was. But I got home that day and I knew I had the job. And when I went to work the following day, we went to lunch every day. And that's when my alcoholism started fast. Now, I need to tell you, because I love this part, but it is my story, my life, but it's so valuable to me when I finally got here and got sober. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father died when I was 10 years old from alcoholism. He fell asleep with a belly full of beer and a cigarette in his hand and burnt the place down. I did not know that my father was an alcoholic until I was 42 years old going to my first treatment center. My mother never talked about it. I thought my father was a fireman in me. I thought he died in a big fire. I thought he was a hero. And the reason I need to share that and remember that is because this was the secrets that I grew up around. And I can remember as a child that when the school teacher asked whose parent could help with the school carnival And somebody said, mine will do the goldfish bowls and mine will do whatever. I raised my hand and said, my mom can't do anything because she works. And I got punished that night. And I got sent to the principal's office the next day to talk about that, because that was a hush-hush thing. That was a secret. We don't tell people that we're, you know, a latchkey child or that mom has to work. There was a lot of shame in it. And I didn't understand any of that. Even my first few years of recovery, I did not understand. I did not know that unintentionally by my mom, that I was raised with secrets and lies and hiding and sneaking. I had a lot of sneaking as a very young child. And I didn't know any of that until I had a lot of recovery, a lot of AA, a lot of Al-Anon, a lot of coming to meetings with him, learning the Al-Anon part. And I know today that my mom did the very, very best thing she could to raise us girls. But you know, she said things to me when I finally did get sober, and Pat tried to get her to go to Al-Anon. She said, you know, she said, your dad had one of those great big old red books that we read and it never worked. He said, I was so glad to get it to the Goodwill when he died. And that was the original big book, one of those original big books. So she still had this even in her later years. And I remember one of the first times we were going to speak down in her neighborhood, which was by then Laguna Niguel. And we went down in the early day, and then we brought our suit and tie. Back then you wore a suit when you used to wear a suit. And we got dressed to go, and she said, now what do you talk about when you go down and speak? And I said, well, we tell them our, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And she said, oh, but don't tell them everything. So this was even in my later years, even after this was, I was about 5 years sober then. So, you know, I got to the point, in fact, it was women. It was particularly, I remember the women, I remember the meeting in our chapter 9 meeting we had here at Verdugo Hospital. I remember I whined and cried and complained that I had to go see mom tomorrow. On Sunday I have to go see mom. And she still had her Al-Anon illness in her. And I was struggling with it. And you know, this Elsie, she said to me, honey, at break, she said, honey, just go down and just forgive her today. Tomorrow, Sunday. Just go forgive her for Sunday. Just for Sunday. Just forgive her. And so I went down that Sunday with Pat, and I wasn't in any better spot than driving here today to have to do this, you know. I was like, oh. And he said, remember what Elsie said? And I go, yeah, and I know I have to see Elsie next Saturday. I'm going to have to tell her I did it. I forgave her for the day, you know. I knew I was going to have to report back. And on the way home that day from seeing mom, I said to Pat, she wasn't bad at all, was she? She was really good today, you know? Well, mom hadn't changed, I was beginning to change. And that's how it happened, you know, very slowly, very, very gradually. Well, backing up to how we got here, how I got here, which is so much a part of our Al-Anon story. When I got that job, I started drinking. You know, it was a whole lot of fun to drink in bars with people that were happy, joyous, and free, I thought at the time. And he was just, yeah, I just wanted him to gel a little, just, you know. And it wasn't happening at home. And so I did what I was raised and knew how to do, and that was to sneak it and hide it and lie about it. And I did it a lot. I never drank in front of him, I didn't think. I'd come home from work just plowed out of my mind. And I learned very early on when I fixed breakfast for the children at the breakfast table, I would start packing their lunch and then I'd think, aha, let's get dinner going too in case you go to the bar after work and you don't come home. And so I'd have these meals cooked, and I kind of fooled him in that sense that I'd call and say, I have a really important client, gonna get us some money, we might get that boat payment, we might, you know. And he'd say, okay, and I'd say, dinner's in the fridge, just get us started. And then I'd come home and I'd just be wasted. And you know, he'd do these things like I'd just kind of be wasted on the floor in the kitchen. He'd step over me, he'd say, you've been drinking again, haven't you? And I'd look up and say, oh no. And you know, I wondered all those times, that every single time I'd say, I must have gotten away with it, because why would he ask? I mean, I was obviously plastered to me, if he doesn't get it. So I remember one time my boss said, I would talk about this problem I had at home. He just was, and my boss would say, well, just tell him, yeah, tonight you had two glasses of wine. Yeah, you had two glasses of wine. Just tell him. All the way home, I'm practicing in the steering room. I had two glasses of wine. Yeah, I did. I had two glasses of wine. Yeah, I did. I don't have to hide it anymore. I had two glasses of wine. I got home. I walk in the door. He goes, you've been drinking, haven't you? And I go, oh, no. So I didn't know I had this fear of him, but I obviously did, carried over, and it got to where he just, you know, he just followed me around all the time. He had this little cute little red Jeep. Did you still have it here when the meeting started? I don't know. One of those cute little red Jeeps when they first came out with no doors and no windows, and I could spot it in La Cañada easily. It was the only one. And he'd come up. By now I'm working up here, because we both figured out, I started relapsing and going to treatment, we both figured out that job was a bad influence on me. It's just the job, you know? Just the job and the people. Nothing to do with us or me. And so he gets me into this little building up here, and I open up my shop up here, and I'm doing my work. And he would come park that little red Jeep right behind my work, watch me leave work every night. And when I saw him do that, I decided, aha, I'm going to go park my car up behind him, waiting for him to come sit there and watch me in the red Jeep. But I just sat in my car, drinking my booze, watching him, looking for me. Now, these are just a few of the stories that we went through. I'm just not going to go into it forever. But, you know, I finally get into a treatment center, and... because they had that big family intervention, and I get out of treatment center and I get drunk again, you know. And so we do this routine for a while. I get a sponsor because they told me I have a sponsor before I go home. And then he would call my sponsor and say, she's drinking again. So I called his Monday night Al-Anon sponsor and I said, guess what? He's calling my sponsor, reporting on me again. And it just went on and on like this. And what finally happened was we separated, finally, after five treatment centers. I'm not proud of that, but it's my story. And he left and left me in what was our big house. And move-out day was great, you know. He took all the furniture, all the food out of the pantry, and I kept helping him pack up and move out. Get rid of him and all, my problem will be over. I can drink like a lady. And but the problem was he kept coming back to get another tool. He was in a little tiny apartment over there, so he didn't take all of the stuff. And he'd come back, and I'd go hide it again. And it was ugly years. And by now, I don't even know where I'm hiding it from me, because he might come, and I don't know where I've hidden it. And we just have so many crazy stories. Well, he left home with me our dog, Magnum. And Magnum barked if the car next door came and slammed their door. A siren went down Foothill, and he'd bark, bark, bark. And now I'm really paranoid. I'm just as paranoid as the drug addicts in the treatment centers. I've just closed in. So I decided I get Magnum a little bit of vodka every night, you know, just a little bit. And he'd lap up that saucer of vodka, and he'd pass out, and then I could drink like a lady, you know. And I was in AA for 2 years sober, finally, when I went, oh my God, that's how it works. Magnum didn't want to get sober any more than I did. But when I took Magnum's vodka away, he got sober. You know, that's what they were telling me. Just don't drink. It works. I did get sober. I went to my mother was coming up to visit, the mother that doesn't have any program. She's coming up to visit our two little children. Now, because I was raised with so many secrets, I never told mother. When you get here, you might notice a change. Pat moved out, took all the furniture and the kids too, so when you get here, it's just me. And she came and she called on the way and said, I'm going to stop and see your grandmother on the way in. And I said, okay, fine, what time will you be here? And I drank till she got to our front door. And for some reason, that was a Saturday afternoon. For some reason, I didn't have another touch of alcohol till Sunday. No, not all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And I started calling my sponsor saying, I cannot come to the meeting Sunday night. See, I was still going to meetings. I went to years of meetings, drinking and relapsing. And I did it for all the wrong reasons, just to get him off my back, her off my back, whatever. I even went to a couples treatment center, drinking without him. Showed up there. I don't know, I got a flyer and said, come on up, and he wouldn't go. So I went and took my booze. I mean, I did weird things. And so Mother's there, and I don't drink. I don't know why I didn't drink. I knew I was going to drink Monday as soon as she left. I didn't drink. I went to that Sunday night meeting. My sponsor, I told her I can't go. I'm shaking like crazy. I just thought I was nervous, you know? Just shaking like crazy. And she said, have a bubble bath, call me back. I took a bubble bath, called her back. I can't go, I'm shaking. Eat some chocolate. My mother went down to Seas and got a box of chocolate, ate the whole box. I'm still shaking. She said, come to the meeting. So I went to the meeting, and that night there was a medical doctor at the podium. Now, there were no pay phones, no cell phones, none of that stuff. In the middle of the meeting, the size of a speaker meeting, I have a grand mal seizure, which is an alcohol withdrawal seizure. And apparently, I was like a fish out of water, flipping around on that cement floor. And he knew what to do, and he had a pager. And they got me to the hospital, and Verdugo. And they called him, and I don't remember, but he pulled the curtain up and said, yeah, that's her, I'm out of here. You know, he had to identify me. And then because of insurance, they shipped me down to Long Beach somewhere. And I was in a coma for 3 days. Oh. Yeah, I was. And when I got out of that coma, I can remember, like you would never believe, I can remember just coming in and out slowly. And I would say those silly things that were plastered all over my meeting hall. First things first. Easy does it. That's what I came out of that coma saying. And I kind of took a breath and I kind of came to and I just go, I'm done. I'm done. I am done. And I didn't have to convince anybody. I was done. And so the nurse said, you're going home. You've been released. And I go, now what do? So I called my sister who's out in Thousand Oaks that I'm staying with, Maria, I'm staying with now. And she said, I'm done with you. Because I needed to ride home from Long Beach. I didn't know any of you guys yet. And so I called my sister and she said, I'm done. I'm tired of watching you killing your mom, our mom, your kids, your husband. I'm tired of watching you killing yourself. I'm done. And I thought, well, kind of busy girl gal, isn't she? And didn't even faze me. And she didn't have Al-Anon either. And so the nurse came in and said, well, you got to go. And I go, well, what do I do? And the nurse said, well, here's a phone book. Call a taxi. So we looked in the yellow pages, got a taxi. He came and he picked me up and I had no money. And he'd taken the credit cards long ago. But I had a Ralph's card that would give me the money over a thing. So this taxi driver, you know, I learned in AA and I learned in my treatment center, just share, you just tell him everything that's going on. I'm telling the taxi driver my whole life, and he pulls over on the middle of the Long Beach freeway, just zoomed over, stopped on the side of the freeway, turned around, said, pay up. He said, I've been driving drunks around my whole life. He said, they never have any money, and they always lie to me, so pay up now before I take you all the way. And I said, you know, I got an Al-Anon taxi driver, swear to God. So he takes me into the market. He goes with me into the market. He said, don't go to the booze. You go right here. And I got home. Somehow with that Ralph's card, I got some money out. And I got home. And I came in and her daughter, bless her heart, opened the front door and said, Mom, you shouldn't be here. And I said, I'm coming in. And I got my clothes changed and I put clothes on. And I knew right where to go. I came right to a meeting. I knew exactly where every meeting in this whole area was because I'd been doing it for a few years. And I raised my hand and, you know, I said, I've been, you know, first 30 days. And it felt different. I didn't care anymore how many times I had somebody one time do this to me in a meeting when I kept raising my hand as a newcomer. They said, you only do it for 30 days, dummy. I go, yeah, I've been doing it for 2.5 years, you know, I'm a newcomer again. And this time it didn't matter. It didn't matter. I was done. And I no longer felt like I had to prove it. You know, I no longer felt like I had to do it for anybody else. I was just done. I say, you know, I said back then, I still say it, I got struck sober. It wasn't on my will. You know, I got struck sober, and I've had a big, big, big struggle with that recently with my higher power and my connection. Because I truly believe this is a spiritual program. I just don't understand it right now. For me today, I don't get it. You know, I felt like a real newcomer again the last couple of years. A real newcomer. And I know a lot of that is me, you know, and I've been doing a lot of self-evaluation because I've been isolating and I've been wanting to challenge some of this. And I know that's not healthy. I know deep down in my veins what this program's about. I know so much about this program because I will tell you that once we got sober, Pat and I have given our soul, our life, everything. This means so much to both of us. Don't ever doubt that. We've been so blessed in Alcoholics Anonymous and with the Al-Anon family group. Now, I'm going to be honest again and tell you, I don't get Al-Anon very well. I've tried it and tried it and tried it and tried it. And I tell people, you know, I visit Al-Anon because I have not done the steps again through Al-Anon. I've tried. I was in Havasu. We have lived there. Some of you know our story. And they only had a little bit of Al-Anon, and I wasn't going to go with him every weekday or whatever he went. So I was going to go to my own little group, and I couldn't find it. And I finally go back at one point when I'm really struggling with both of our children. We have a daughter and a son. One's in jail, one's in the psych ward over prescription pills. And so I go to my AA meeting out there, and I said, okay, I need help. I'm hurting. I need help. I need Al-Anon. And so this really neat gal comes up to me. She had 22 years of sobriety and 18 years in Al-Anon. And she said, we're going to work together on this, because I couldn't get it in the meetings. There was only one or two meetings, and he was at them all the time. You know, this is the deal. We tried to sponsor each other. It doesn't work. It could and would work, but he doesn't follow my directions. And I don't need his crap, you know? So when he says, let go and let God, I want to say, fine, you do yours, you do it. I'm holding on, I'm hanging on. But I went out there and I'm really hurting. And I love Al-Anon. I love it because what it's done for him, you know? As a changed person, I love so much that he's still committed even before our recent losses and tragedies. Even back when I had 20 years or whatever, and we're just going because we love you all, and we didn't have these, he's still going and committed and got service positions and doing the deal like all good members should, you know? But I didn't like him when he told me how to do it. So I find this gal at this meeting, and she said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to meet every Wednesday. We're going to go to our AA meeting Wednesday at noon, and then we're going to come back to my house, and we're going to sit down and spend an hour. We're going to go through the book one by one. I said, okay, fine. And the first Wednesday comes, and I got a stomachache and headache. I don't want to go, but I do it because I'm willing, and I told her I would, and I go, and I sit there in her kitchen, and her husband's delightful, and he goes and shuts the door, and we work, and I drive out of her house, and I feel so much better. You know, so much better. And so the next week I go back and I don't want to go and I'm struggling and I go and I go and we sit down and we work through it and I feel so much better. So what's my resistance about? I don't know. I got an alcoholic head that says one thing and comes out different here. I said I need speed bumps in between the brain and the mouth, you know, slow me down. I can recognize it in him. I can tell him, pause. Wait, you know, but not in me. And we're doing this deal, and I'm feeling better, and he says I'm acting better, and everybody's saying just like when I first came to AA, Willie's one of the first ones when I first got sober. He said, Candy, you're getting so much better. Before I knew it, you know, Willie could tell me, you're doing better. And she up and moves to Florida and moves away. And she said, I said, did I drive you out of here? And she goes, no, but almost, you know. But she moved to Florida, so I lost that. And then we ended up moving, and then we start again. Now we're trooping me. We are trooping together every Wednesday for a 5:30 meeting that's an hour away because I feel comfortable enough. I know I need it. I feel comfortable enough that it's not just his meeting, you know. It's a new meeting an hour away, and we're starting over. Oh, and I keep grabbing these women in AA that come up to me and say, oh, man, I need Al-Anon. I know. I go, oh, good, come on over. Let's do it together. Let's just go through the book, do the steps, do the readings, you know. It might happen if you all go home and pray for me tonight. I might get here, you know, I might. But I love Al-Anon. I know the value of it. I just need to do it and make that commitment. And I was on a board of director of women's board at the Woman to Woman conference up in Arrowhead for over 15 years. And it's a fabulous conference. The board consists of 6 alcoholics and 6 Al-Anon women, and they're my best friends, and I love them to pieces. And every time I go up the hill, I go, okay, guys, I'll be a newcomer. I'll join Al-Anon, and they go, oh, yay! Next year I come back, have you done it yet, you know? I often tell people that come to me and say their alcoholic spouse, sister, child is really struggling. They often say, is AA, will AA work? And I go, well, you know, I don't know if it'll work for your loved ones. But I know if it's anything like me, it's going to ruin their drinking. You know, that's about it. And I used to think that, you know, alcoholism was contagious. If I went in and hung around with all these alcoholics way back, I'd become an alcoholic. And I say now that alcoholism is not contagious to the newcomers, but recovery definitely is. Recovery is definitely contagious. And we belong together. And the thing I know most about when we've lived to such an isolated area is that we need each other. And that's the most valuable part of our program that was started by 2 drunks just like me that needed each other. So we all need you. I think it's your turn.